Hello and good evening, guys and dolls. Thank you for joining me. This is California Dreaming, a California podcast. I am doing a special tonight on Cinco de Mayo since it is May 5th, which is Cinco de Mayo in Spanish. And perhaps you already knew, but the largest Cinco de Mayo celebration is held right here in California in Los Angeles. So maybe some of you wonder, why do we celebrate Cinco de Mayo in the United States? Isn't it a Mexican holiday? Well, in the United States, Cinco de Mayo is widely interpreted as a celebration of Mexican culture and heritage, particularly in the areas with substantial Mexican-American populations. Chicano activists raised awareness of the holiday in the 1960s, in part because they identified with the victory of indigenous Mexicans, such as Juarez, over European invaders during the Battle of Puebla. Today, revelers mark the occasion with parades, parties, mariachi music, Mexican folk dancing, and traditional foods such as tacos and mole poblano. Some of the largest festivals are held in Los Angeles, as I stated in the beginning, but also in Chicago and Houston. Today, Cinco de Mayo marks the 162nd anniversary of Cinco de Mayo. While it's a relatively minor holiday in Mexico, the annual fiesta is an excuse in the United States to indulge in margaritas, cervezas, which is beer, guacamole, and tacos. But what exactly does Cinco de Mayo celebrate? Well, let's brush up on some of its rich history and modern traditions. We'll start with, is Cinco de Mayo the same as Mexican Independence Day? Well, many people tend to confuse Cinco de Mayo with Dia de la Independencia. I'm not really great at some of these. That's a Independencia. Forgive me. I spoke it horribly, I'm sure. In other words, it's Mexico's Independence Day. That holiday, also known as El Grito de la Independencia, is actually observed on September 16th, when Mexico celebrates its independence from Spain. So why is Cinco de Mayo celebrated? Well, in Mexico, Cinco de Mayo is not a celebration, but a day of remembrance commemorating Mexico's victory over the French during the 1862 Battle of Puebla. An outnumbered Mexican army, which was led by Ignacio Zaragoza, a 33-year-old Texan from Goliad, defeated the invading French forces at the small town of Puebla de Los Angeles during the Franco-Mexico War. The retreat of the French troops represented a great victory for the people of Mexico, symbolizing the country's ability to defend its sovereignty against a powerful foreign nation. So the history behind Cinco de Mayo, the first Cinco de Mayo celebrations date back to the 1860s, when Mexicans living in California commemorated the victory over France in Puebla. At that time, the United States was embroiled in a civil war. News of the underdog Mexican army beating back Napoleon III's forces gave new strength to California Latinos, and they sought to stop the advances of the Confederate Army. David Hayes Bautista, a professor of medicine and director of the Center for the Study of Latino Health and Culture at the University of California, Los Angeles, said, "For Mexicans in the U.S., the Civil War and French invasion of Mexico were like one war with two fronts. They were concerned about France, which sided with the Confederacy, being on America's doorstep. I don't even know how many times I'm going to say Cinco de Mayo during this podcast, but it's a lot. The tradition of celebrating Cinco de Mayo has continued in Los Angeles without interruption since 1862, according to Hayes Bautista, although the original reason and the history have gotten lost. About a century later, Chicano activists rediscovered the holiday and embraced it as a symbol of ethnic pride. But the party-filled Cinco de Mayo that Americans celebrate today didn't become popular until U.S. beer companies began targeting the Spanish-speaking population in the 1970s and 1980s. Today, Cinco de Mayo in the U.S. is primarily a celebration of Mexican-American culture. If you want to do Cinco de Mayo right, put down the taco, por favor. Contrary to popular belief, you won't find ground beef tacos, nachos, and frozen margaritas in Mexico on Cinco de Mayo. The traditional dish eaten in the town of Puebla on their big holiday is mole poblano, according to the Smithsonian. Invented in the late 17th century, mole is a thick sauce made with chocolate, chilies, nuts, and other spices. Traditionally, the sauce covers succulent chicken or turkey. I actually have a really good friend. She lives in Northern California, and she made the most amazing mole sauce. She had put it over, I want to say, prime rib maybe, and I was blessed enough, and I guess just very fortunate to have her cook for me. She is from Mexico, and she just, gosh, she makes the most amazing recipes, and I just let her cook for me all day, but it's a very good dish, the mole. So while mole recipes differ from family to family, and by state in Mexico, they all have one thing in common. Mole represents the heart of Mexican culture because it's served on the most special of occasions, including weddings, baby showers, and holidays. And also when I stay at my friend's house. That was a special occasion. I hadn't seen her for a while when she made it for me. So I'm going to include a link to that recipe in the show notes. It's a recipe for the mole sauce. It is a recipe from Lourdes Suarez. So it's just a recipe that I obtained online. It is not my personal friend's recipe, but I will include that. You also probably will not find hard shell tacos stuffed with bland ground beef and topped with iceberg lettuce and cheddar. But you will find lamb barbacoa that has been smoked underground in banana leaves, or carnitas topped with queso fresco, pickled onions, and homemade salsa verde, wrapped in a warm homemade corn tortilla that has been ever so lightly heated on a comal. And Puebla just so happens to be considered by many, including Rick Bayless and Mark Bittman, as the gastronomic capital of Mexico. Yeah, I can see that. Oh, that food would definitely give heartburn or something of that nature. However, it all sounds delicious. Before Spanish explorers and immigrants swarmed Mexico, Puebla was already a culinary capital. The sacred town of Cholula, known for its great pre-Columbian pyramid, was also home to pre-Columbian street food. In this ancient city, vendors would set up outside the pyramid to feed those who came to worship. After arriving in Puebla, the Spanish settled close to Cholula and created what is known today as the City of Puebla. Religion was a major aspect of Spanish conquest, and convents and monasteries were set up across the city. Spanish nuns invented many of Puebla's and Mexico's most cherished dishes in these convents by integrating old world traditions with new world ingredients. And with that history in mind, the three famous dishes from Puebla are mole poblano, which I said before, chalupas, and chiles en nogada. So mole poblano is probably the most consumed dish in Puebla for Cinco de Mayo. And there are actually two origin stories to the word mole, which is pronounced mole. It's spelled M-O-L-E. So in, you know, the English language, we would pronounce it mole, but we're not talking about English here. So the first origin is that mole is Spanish translation of the Aztec or Nahuatl word for sauce, moli, M-U-L-L-I. The second is that mole comes from Spanish word meaning moler, which means to grind. So whichever story you want to believe, mole is a sauce made up from ground ingredients and comes in all colors and consistencies. But the thick, dark mole poblano has made its mark on the gastronomic world, like I said before. And legend has it that mole poblano was first created in the kitchen of the Santa Rosa convent in Puebla by Sor Andrea de la Asunción in the 17th century. According to the theology of food, eating, and the Eucharist, Sor Andrea de la, I have to say it again, Sor Andrea de la Asunción is said to have prepared it for Don Tomás Antonio de la Cerda y Aragón, the new viceroy of Spain. This dish is the ultimate combination of old and new world ingredients and cooking practices. This sauce can be somewhat daunting due to the laundry list of ingredients and various complex techniques involved. But after one taste of this mole, all the roasting and toasting will be worth it. And if you do check out that link for the mole recipe that I'm going to include, and you have never made mole before, you are going to see a very long list of ingredients. And it can be a bit intimidating. The second famous dish from Puebla during Cinco de Mayo is chalupas. It is an iconic poblano street food. It bears a resemblance to tostadas and are the perfect antojito for any Cinco de Mayo celebration. To put it simply, chalupas are fried thick tortillas topped with salsa, shredded meat, chopped onion, and sometimes queso fresco. There is a story behind the origin of the name chalupas, which this is just one of them. There's probably many. Chalupas date back to colonial times when Spanish settlers spent a good part of their days washing clothes by the Almoloya, which is a San Francisco river. It's said that the women carried everything to the river in big baskets made of wood called chalupas, after which they'd rush home and quickly fry up corn tortillas in lard, top them with salsa, shredded beef or pork, and chopped onion, and they call it dinner. The third famous dish from Puebla is chiles en nogada, which is an iconic dish of Mexico. It is said to have been invented in the convent of Santa Monica for Agustin de Iturbide's visit to Puebla in 1821. Agustin de Iturbide was Mexico's first emperor after Mexico won independence from Spain. He was served chiles en nogada in Puebla while traveling back to Mexico City from Veracruz after signing the Treaty of Cordoba, which gave Mexico its independence. The dish signifies Mexico's independence and is made up of colors of the Mexican flag, red, white, and green. The flavors are just as colorful as the ingredients. The sweet, savory picadillo, stuffed poblano, pepper dipped in egg batter, fried and topped with a rich walnut sauce, pomegranate seeds, and parsley is something you will not regret trying. Though it is more traditionally made for Mexico's Independence Day on September 16th, it is one of Puebla's most cherished dishes. Now, is Cinco de Mayo celebrated in Mexico? It is definitely celebrated in Mexico, but compared to other Mexican holidays, it's relatively quiet. You'll often find businesses closed on unofficial holidays, but banks always stay open on Cinco de Mayo. That said, celebrations in Puebla tend to be more enthusiastic for obvious reasons. Along with an elaborate parade that the president attends, the armed forces recreate the Batalla de Puebla, with around 100 soldiers at the original location every year. Elsewhere in Mexico, the celebrations are more reserved. Children may have a special history lesson at school, and individual cities like Mexico City may hold a civic ceremony and a military parade, which sometimes involves small reenactments of the battle. Civic ceremonies often include a live band, speeches, folkloric dance, and regional costumes. So why do we celebrate Cinco de Mayo here in the United States? Well, unlike celebrations in Mexico, Cinco de Mayo festivities in the United States are abundant and have become a way to celebrate and recognize Mexican-American culture. Mexican-American communities especially are continuing to lead the effort in turning the dial from a day of appropriation to a day of true honor and celebration. Mexico and the United States have long been intertwined, dating back to the Mexican-American War. Mexico may have lost much of the Southwest and even part of the Great Plains to the United States in 1848, but its people and culture remained. Buoyed by an ongoing wave of immigrants from Mexico, you'll find elements of Mexican-American culture throughout the U.S., hence the popularity of this day. And as I stated before, Cinco de Mayo celebrations started in the U.S. in the 1950s, and were bolstered by Chicanos in the 1960s. However, it was starting in the 1980s that they became more commercialized. Nowadays, events sponsored by cities and cultural organizations are not unlike the celebrations in Mexico with parades, parties, dancing, and music. They do, however, happen in grande, in a big way. There may be live mariachi music or folkloric dancing in bright costumes, but there don't tend to be reenactments of the actual battle like it is in Mexico. Although cities like Chicago, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and San Antonio, among many others, also have festivals, the biggest and best are Los Angeles, where their festival is known as Fiesta Broadway, and they have mariachi bands, Latino musical, which superstars, and Mexican food galore. This festival, sometimes held on a Sunday before the Cinco de Mayo, packs in fun for the whole family. So I imagine today was probably a huge celebration, being that Cinco de Mayo is actually on a Sunday. So it would have been enormous. Now, the next big city that there are celebrations is Denver. This mountainous city holds a big event for Cinco de Mayo that includes street food, live music, and the Green Chili Bowl cook-off. An important dish of the Southwest, green chili is a spicy dish of beef or chicken and, you guessed it, green salsa, often made with New Mexican hatch chilies, a specialty of the region. The third large city where there are celebrations is San Diego. Now, their celebration lasts an entire 3 days. It all happens in the historic Old Town neighborhood where you can hear live music, watch folkloric dance, and eat to your heart's content. And then, of course, drink some outlandish Mexican cocktails. And that concludes the Cinco de Mayo portion. Where does it relate to California? Well, I was thinking there's the biggest party in the world in Los Angeles for Cinco de Mayo. It's also important to honor and remember the Mexican-American heritage. Now for the next segment, which is Just the Facts, Ma'am. This is where I tell you a whole bunch of crazy facts and stuff that you didn't know, and of course, things that you do know. The Spanish national anthem has no words. The Marcha Real, is one of only 4 national anthems in the world without lyrics. There are three other national anthems, which are from Bosnia, Herzegovina, Kosovo, and San Marino. Next, the Japanese word kuchizumishi is the act of eating when you aren't hungry because your mouth is lonely. Kuchizumishi, literal translation, is lonely mouth. I am always snacking on something and my mouth is never lonely. The probability of a blue lobster existing is widely touted as being 1 in 2 million. Bright blue lobsters are so colored because of a genetic abnormality that causes them to produce more of a certain protein than others. Yellow lobsters are even more rare at 1 in 30 million, and albino, aka crystal ones, are more like 1 in 100 million. Now, I actually looked up a picture of a blue lobster, and it is very bright blue. And speaking of colors due to eating certain foods, maybe you didn't know that flamingos are actually born either white or gray. They don't gain their pink color close to 2 years from birth. The pinkish color is because of carotenoids in their algae and brine shrimp diet. In fact, carrots get their orange color from carotenoids, and that is also where tomatoes get their red coloring. And speaking of red and color, Louis Vuitton's iconic red soles were inspired by Andy Warhol. Andy Warhol is the 60s pop artist, and it was from his lithograph Flowers, called Flowers, that caught the eye of the famous designer, which gave him the idea to add the infamous sole to his designs. Now, the prototype of that shoe by Louis Vuitton was pink in color. So the first thing that came out was it was too pink. He didn't think that it popped enough. So he saw his assistant painting her nails, and then that's when he had his aha moment. He had taken some red nail varnish to paint the sole of that prototype shoe instead. In an email, Louis Vuitton told CNN Style, and this is a quote, "The color red is a representation of love, passion, and life. It's strong, noticeable, powerful, and known for attracting good fortune." End quote. The Louis Vuitton aesthetic is both decadent and daring, part Marie Antoinette and part femme fatale. There is only one letter that doesn't appear in any American state name, and that is the letter Q. And in case you ever wondered when Google Images was created and why, well, it was literally created after Jennifer Lopez wore that infamous Versace dress at the February 2000 Grammys. So many people were searching for her outfit that the search engine added an image function. Walt Disney currently holds the most Academy Awards, Disney won 26 Oscars over the course of his career and was nominated a grand total of 59 times. And here's a wild one. There's a fruit that tastes like low-sugar chocolate pudding. Apparently, there's a fruit native to Central and South America called black sapote that tastes like chocolate and sweet custard. Some say the taste is more like caramel or sweet squash. The pulp is white when not ripe, but it turns dark brown to almost black when it is ripe. Although indigenous to Central and South America, where it once was cultivated by the Aztecs and other indigenous people, it was later spread to other areas of the world. It now grows in damp tropical regions of North America, Latin America, and the Philippines, Moluccas Island, and Sulawesi Island. It doesn't grow here, unfortunately. I would love to just sit there and eat black sapote. Queen Elizabeth II was a trained mechanic. When she was 16, the Queen joined the British Employment Agency at the Labor Exchange and learned the basics of truck repair. Apparently, she can repair tires and repair engines, which is a great skill to have. Did you know that the Easter Island heads, you know those Easter Island statues, they're just tall heads, stone heads. They actually have bodies, but they're covered, they're buried in the dirt and grass, so you only see the head. They are called moai. Moai. They have torsos that measure as high as 33 feet. They have no legs. It's just the head and the torso. It was in the 2010s that archaeologists found the two of the Pacific Island figures actually have torsos. So that was probably an amazing find. And I had looked up a picture of it when I was doing the research on this, and it's hard to picture 33 feet until you see the picture. And I saw one of the archaeologists at the base of that torso, and it's just enormous. But M&Ms. Now here's one. M&Ms are named after the businessmen who created them. So what do the M stand for? Well, Forrest E. Mars Sr., who is or was the founder of Mars, and Bruce Murray, which he was the son of Hershey Chocolate's president, William F.R. Murray. So you've got Mars and Murray, M&M. Anyway, pigeons can tell the difference between Picasso and Monet. In 1995, a study showed that the birds can differentiate between the two artists. They know the difference between quote-unquote good or bad or ugly based on reading humans' faces and reactions. So I don't know how much the pigeons know about the paintings as opposed to watching people's faces. But and here's one for today's people, today's society. The real name for hashtag is Octothorpe. The octo refers to the 8 points in the symbol. But according to the Merriam-Webster Dictionary, the Thorpe part is a mystery. We also call it the tic-tac-toe board. But the actors who voiced Mickey and Minnie, and before I even get into that, I found out that Minnie's full name is Minerva. I never knew that. I never thought to look for it. I've just never heard about that. But the people who voiced the two mice got married in real life. So the voice actors, Russie Taylor and Wayne Allwine, tied the knot in 1991. According to Disney Parks, Wayne stated, quote, "When we got married, we kind of kept it quiet because everybody was saying, oh, Mickey and Minnie got married. It wasn't Mickey and Minnie, it was Wayne and Russie. We wanted to keep it about us and not the characters," end quote. So they kept the marriage a secret for a decade, and they remained married until Wayne's death in 2009. So So they are married for, nearly 20 years? You can hear a blue whale's heartbeat from over 2 miles away. Now, I actually had to look this up on a few websites because it seemed like it wasn't true. How can you hear something from 2 miles away? But apparently, blue whales weigh an average of between 286,600 pounds and 330,693 pounds. Their hearts weigh roughly 396 pounds, and you can hear the heartbeat 2 miles away. The last letter added to the English alphabet was J. The letter dates back to 1524, and before that, the I was used for both the I and J sounds. I didn't even know we had those kind of letters back in 1524. There is actually a word for someone giving an opinion on something they know nothing about. An ultra crepidarian is someone who voices thoughts beyond their expertise. So I never claim to be an expert about Cinco de Mayo or whales' hearts or anything, so don't hold it against me. The Chupa Chups logo was designed by Salvador Dali. The surrealist artist designed the logo in 1969. Chupa Chups brand name comes from the Spanish verb chupar, which means to suck. And the last fact I'm going to share tonight is that ketchup was once sold as medicine. It was prescribed and sold to people suffering with indigestion back in 1834. So that is something that I'll get more into in next Sunday's podcast, because there's more in the history of ketchup as far as what it was used for, what was in it, the way that it was spelled, pronounced, everything. So the next segment is Dream a Little Dream. So this is a dream of mine from June 5th, 2017. It has a, what are they called, the stars in it, Chinese stars, which is probably the wrong term. But at 10:38 p.m., I don't know who the lady was, but she was Asian and she was following me in my dream. I was at my grandma's house in her bedroom, and I heard the lady say that I wasn't good enough and my work wasn't up to her standards. I was hiding from her because she became evil. I could feel the evil radiating off of her. Then I felt a hard hit in my side, and I was shielding myself from something. I just saw that she was throwing something at me. Then I saw what it was. It was a ninja star. But then it became like a boomerang, and it would just keep slamming into me with its sharp sides, and she wouldn't let up on throwing it at me. The star would just keep circling itself back to her, and she caught it, it wouldn't even hurt her. It was just like a boomerang for her. So I finally asked Jesus to help me, and that's when I woke up. It was right when I was about to be struck again with that ninja star, but it was going toward my head in the dream. When I had woken up, I remember my body was actually hurting. It was everywhere that I'd been hit with that ninja star, and it's every blow sent sharp stabbing pains. So yeah, I could feel the pain in my stomach, my sides, my back. And I could even tell that I'd been making noise as every time I was hit in my dream. And it just, yeah, it was pretty scary. I was even teary-eyed when I'd woken up. Sometimes my dreams are just a little bit too real. And that concludes tonight's podcast. That is now 2 hours late. So I'm sorry to that, I don't know, those 5 people who listened to me. And I have a suggestion. Maybe listen when you need to go to sleep, because I've been told that I have a soothing voice. So maybe you want to do that. But And I just now remembered one part of these podcasts is Book'em, which I talk about books that I am reading, rather a book I am reading. I am still on the Palmetto Point series. There are 14 books in the series. There are approximately 300 to 400 pages in each book. I just finished book 12, so I only have two to go. It is a series by Wendy Wang. Book 12 was called Kitchen Witch. There were a lot of things going on with the witches and with the humans. It did get a little bit dark, like this series tends to do. And one of them was that a man had abducted a woman and had her chained up, and he was brutally beating her and doing other awful things to her. And he had already killed several women. So that was the dark part of the story, but it's still good. That is actually the reason why I was running late tonight, because I was thinking, okay, I only have 60 more pages, and then it was 5:30, and then it was 6 o'clock, and I believe I finished at 5:30, but I just, 1 hour was not enough to get this out. So yeah, Wendy Wang, Palmetto Point, and I just finished Kitchen Witch. Green Witch is next. If you want to contact me, my email is themoodyredhead@yahoo.com. And yes, I am moody. Although I am now medicated, I still have my moodiness. It's the same way that I've been since I was as long as I can remember, since I was a child, I've always been moody. But that is neither here nor there. Remember, you are loved. Everything that happens is for a reason, and this too shall pass. Thank you for listening. Join me, myself, and I, next Sunday at 6:30 p.m. Deuces!